Welcome to Bite at a Time Books, where we read you your favorite classics one bite at a time. My name is Bree Carlisle, and I love to read, and wanted to share my passion with listeners like you. If you want to know what's coming next and vote on upcoming books, sign up for our newsletter at biteatatimebooks.com. You'll also find our new t-shirts in the shop, including podcast shirts and quote shirts from your favorite classic novels. Be sure to follow my show on your favorite podcast platform so you get all the new episodes. You can find most of our links in the show notes. But also our website, biteatatimebooks.com, includes all of the links for our show, including to our Patreon to support the show, and YouTube, where we have special behind the narration of the episodes. We're part of the Bite at a Time Books Productions Network. If you'd also like to hear what inspired your favorite classic authors to write their novels, and what was going on in the world at the time, check out the Bite at a Time Books Behind the Story podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Please note, while we try to keep the text as close to the original as possible, some words have been changed to honor the marginalized communities who've identified the words as harmful, and to stay in alignment with Bite at a Time Books' brand values. Today we'll be continuing Les Misérables by Victor Hugo. Chapter 7. Cravat. It is here that a fact falls naturally into place, which we must not omit because it is one of a sort which shows us best what sort of a man the Bishop of D was. After the destruction of the band of Gaspard Bay, who had infested the gorges of Olillet, one of his lieutenants, Cravat, who took refuge in the mountains, he concealed himself for some time with his bandits, the remnant of Gaspard Bay's troop, in the country of Nice. Then he made his way to Piedmont, and suddenly reappeared in France in the vicinity of Barcelonnette. He was first seen at Jaugeres, then at Toulay. He hid himself in the caverns of the Joug des Aigles, and thence he descended towards the hamlets and villages, through the ravines of Oubiers and Oubillette. He even pushed as far as Embrun, entered the cathedral one night, and despoiled the sacristy. His highway robberies laid waste the countryside. The gendarmes were set on his track, but in vain. He always escaped. Sometimes he resisted by main force. He was a bold wretch. In the midst of all this terror, the bishop arrived. He was making a circuit to Chastelar. The mayor came to meet him and urged him to retrace his steps. Cravat was in possession of the mountains as far as Arch, and beyond. There was danger even with an escort. It merely exposed three or four unfortunate gendarmes to no purpose. Therefore, said the bishop, I intend to go without escort. You do not really mean that, Monseigneur, exclaimed the mayor. I do mean it so thoroughly that I absolutely refuse any gendarmes and shall set out in an hour. Set out? Set out. Alone? Alone. Monseigneur, you will not do that. There exists yonder in the mountains, said the bishop, a tiny community no bigger than that, which I have not seen for 3 years. They are my good friends, those gentle and honest shepherds. They own one goat out of every 30 that they tend. They make very pretty woolen cords of various colors, and they play the mountain airs on little flutes with 6 holes. They need to be told of the good God now and then. What would they say to a bishop who was afraid? What would they say if I did not go? But the brigands, Monseigneur. Hold, said the bishop. I must think of that. You are right. I may meet them. They too need to be told of the good God. But, Monseigneur, there's a band of them. A flock of wolves. Monseigneur le Maire, it may be that it is of this very flock of wolves that Jesus has constituted me the shepherd. Who knows the ways of Providence? They will rob you, Monseigneur. I have nothing. They will kill you. An old goodman of a priest who passes along mumbling his prayers. But to what purpose? Oh, mon Dieu, what if you should meet them? I should beg alms of them for my poor. Do not go, Monseigneur. In the name of heaven, you are risking your life. Monseigneur le Maire, said the bishop, is that really all? I am not in the world to guard my own life, but to guard souls. They had to allow him to do as he pleased. He set out, accompanied only by a child who offered to serve as a guide. His obstinacy was bruited about the countryside and caused great consternation. He would take neither his sister nor Madame Magloire. He traversed the mountain on muleback, encountered no one, and arrived safe and sound at the residence of his good friends, the shepherds. He remained there for a fortnight, preaching, administering the sacrament, teaching, exhorting. When the time of his departure approached, he resolved to chant a Te Deum pontifically. He mentioned it to the curé, but what was to be done? There were no episcopal ornaments. They could only place at his disposal a wretched village sacristy, with a few ancient chasubles of threadbare damask adorned with imitation lace. "Bah," said the bishop, "let us announce our Te Deum from the pulpit. Nevertheless, Monsieur le Curé, things will arrange themselves." They instituted a search in the churches of the neighborhood. All the magnificence of these humble parishes combined would not have sufficed to clothe a chorister of a cathedral properly. While they were thus embarrassed, a large chest was brought and deposited in the presbytery for the bishop by two unknown horsemen who departed on the instant. The chest was opened. It contained a cope of cloth of gold, a mitre ornamented with diamonds, an archbishop's cross, a magnificent crosier, all the pontifical vestments which had been stolen a month previously from the treasury of Notre Dame d'Ambrun. In the chest was a paper on which these words were written, "From Cravat to Monseigneur Bienvenu." "Did not I say that things would come right of themselves?" said the bishop. Then he added with a smile, "To him who contents himself with the surplice of a curate, God sends the cope of an archbishop." "Monseigneur," murmured the curé, throwing back his head with a smile, "God or the devil?" The bishop looked steadily at the curé and repeated with authority, "God." When he returned to Chastelar, the people came out to stare at him as at a curiosity, all along the road. At the priest's house in Chastelar, he rejoined Mademoiselle Baptistine and Madame Magloire, who were waiting for him. And he said to his sister, "Well, was I in the right? The poor priest went to his poor mountaineers with empty hands, and he returns from them with his hands full. I set out, bearing only my faith in God. I have brought back the treasure of a cathedral." That evening, before he went to bed, he said again, "Let us never fear robbers nor murderers. Those are dangers from without, petty dangers. Let us fear ourselves. Prejudices are the real robbers. Vices are the real murderers. The great dangers lie within ourselves. What matters it what threatens our head or our purse? Let us think only of that which threatens our soul." Then turning to his sister, "Sister, never precaution on the part of the priest against his fellow man. That which his fellow does, God permits. Let us confine ourselves to prayer when we think that a danger is approaching us. Let us pray not for ourselves, but that our brother may not fall into sin on our account." However, such incidents were rare in his life. We relate those of which we know. But generally, he passed his life in doing the same things at the same moment. 1 month of his year resembled 1 hour of his day. As to what became of the treasure of the Cathedral of Embrun, we should be embarrassed by any inquiry in that direction. It consisted of very handsome things, very tempting things, and things which were very well adapted to be stolen for the benefit of the unfortunate. Stolen they had already been elsewhere. Half of the adventure was completed. It only remained to impart a new direction to the theft, and to cause it to take a short trip in the direction of the poor. However, we make no assertions on this point. Only a rather obscure note was found among the bishop's papers which may bear some relation to this matter, and which is couched in these terms. The question is, to decide whether this should be turned over to the cathedral or to the hospital. Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Brie Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of Les Misérables. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at biteatatimebooks.com and check out the shop. You can check out the show notes or our website, biteatatimebooks.com, for the rest of the links for our show. We'd love to hear from you on social media as well.